Welcome to Finance's AI Makeover, a two-part KPMG podcast. I'm Katie Hulkemeyer, leader of KPMG's technology audit practice in the United States. With the widespread adoption of generative AI, finance organizations are exploring practical applications to enhance their operations and decision-making processes. In part one, we delve into these cases and the future of ERP systems. In part two, we'll explore AI governance models, the role of AI agents in enhancing finance operations, and more. Joining us on our AI journey is Ed Moran, the head of KPMG's Audit Innovations, who will lead today's discussion. We also have two esteemed guests, Vidya Gugnani from SAP's AI Partner Product Management Organization, who specializes in helping partners innovate and build solutions on AI, generative AI, and business AI. Additionally, we have Abraham Ogudu, a Sloan Fellow at Stanford Business School with only 15 years of experience in audit and consulting. Abraham recently conducted research on generative AI use cases for CFOs. In part one of this podcast, we explore the evolution of generative AI, key milestones, and how finance organizations are integrating AI to boost their efficiency and decision-making capabilities. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy our discussion. Ed, the floor is yours.
Great. Thanks, Katie, and thanks for setting this up. Terrific idea. So, as Katie mentioned, I head up audit innovation here in the U.S. for KPMG, and we've been working with Gen AI for quite a while, and I'm really excited to have Vidya and Abraham with us today. So, just a little background on this podcast. So, when Katie reached out to me initially, and she introduced Abraham to me, I thought this would be terrific. And then thinking about the conversations I'm having with our clients and other companies, I said, we need to get SAP involved. We need to get an ERP involved because so many of the questions that our clients have really are around, do I build? Do I buy? Do I wait? What kind of applications can I expect from SAP? And others in the tech stack. So I'm really excited to have Vidya along today to talk about this. So why don't we start off with kind of how we got involved with Gen AI? I'll kick off. In my innovation group, we were using it. Probably we were using OpenAI's technology. I think around 2022 we started using it, and then when ChatGPT, I guess 3.5 it was, came out in late 22 or early 23, we were just blown away by how literate it was and how easy it was to use and how insightful it was, and the coaching abilities and the summarization and the multimodality were really incredible. And as we all know, it's only been layered on from that. But I try to think of it broadly. I try to think about it, you know, from a perspective of it can edit, it can create, it can compare, it can coach, it can teach, and, you know, constantly kind of challenging us to think about it in a much broader construct than just, here's what it can do for an auditor, here's what it can do for an accountant. And I know we'll talk about a lot of those applications, and they're really incredible, but you know, let's kind of think about this from the whole enterprise. And I know, Vidya, you've got kind of a full suite of different applications where you see it. And Abraham, as you've been out speaking to CFOs and doing your research, I know you've been seeing broad applications for Gen AI. So let's try to keep that broad lens, that broad perspective. So that's how my team started working with generative AI. Vidya, be curious to hear kind of what was your introduction. I know you've been looking at AI for quite a while and have a nice long tenure with SAP, but where did the Gen AI start to become obvious to you and where you saw some of the applications?
I think like for most of us, my introduction to the AI world has been when I saw the recommendations coming on Netflix for my movies. And my son doing most of his homework, copying it from ChatGPT. But keeping that aside, I think it's been a fascinating journey looking at the evolution of generative AI. Personally, I think I definitely got involved and intrigued because I used a lot of photo editing tools. I think whether it was Canva or Flickr and many others, or InShot, just to create these videos and pictures. And as I think the whole word generative AI indicates, with DALL-E, DALL-E 3, all of this complete transformation of how you can just think of something and have it come to life. I think it's amazing. It's just blown my mind away. I think that was one of the simplest things that I could see coming into action, where I could create a profile picture for LinkedIn in a few seconds. But of course, in the business world, it's far more expansive. And with SAP, the journey for me personally began with a lot of the innovations that I've been working on and creating, not only with customers, but also with the partner community. SAP has a long and rich history of innovation, and we've been working and encouraging our ecosystem to develop innovations on top of SAP. Whether it started with in the 1970s with the inception of what we know as ERP, to then when it went later to the development of the databases and developing on top of what most of you know as SAP HANA, to going into the cloud, and then a lot of revolutionary technologies, which I would say went into the hype curve, be it blockchain, IoT, machine learning, and many others. Our partners have been building a lot of innovative solutions on all of these, and I've been supporting them and building that. So it became, I would say, a natural transition with the whole hype curve with AI picking up, that what our partners were building, they wanted to adopt and make them AI relevant or add an AI flavor to it. So not only did we have to train ourselves and keep pace with what the entire world and community is building, but also provide this ecosystem the tools that they needed to do it. So I think that's where my evolution and journey began with SAP, roughly, I think, around 3.5 years, very consistently in the generative AI world.
And that was a great lead in, because you rattled off cloud, you rattled off all the different kind of things that have happened, and without those, we wouldn't be able to take advantage of this, right? And I think,
absolutely,
right. It kind of had to, Gen AI had to wait for a lot of underlying infrastructure and the data to be able to train and all of that. So you know, this was a long time coming. Right, and probably couldn't have come any sooner, just because you need so many different pieces in place. And your point about Flickr and all the video editing tools, it's really, anyone that's familiar with that, and I'm sure a lot of our audience is, having to use the lasso and get colors and and clone things and move things around. And when you think that you can now use English or any other language prompt and get to that, is really stunning. It's an amazing evolution. It's a revolution that's taken place in the last couple of years. Yeah. So thanks for that video. How about you, Abraham? What was your entry into the field?
Yes. So like you, Ed, I was blown away by ChatGPT 3.5 back in 2022. And my journey since then with Gen AI has evolved in three stages: exploration, upskilling, and practical application. First, with exploration and curiosity, the turning point for me came in May 2023 when ChatGPT-4 passed the US CPA exam with an 85% score. As a licensed CPA in the US and in France, I recognized then the potential of large language models and felt both excitement and professional skepticism, right? And the second stage for me was upskilling, I then enrolled in a full-time executive MBA at Stanford to deepen my machine learning and AI skills, learning coding skills, playing with some of the application and data sciences. However, while I was doing that, I was using the school primarily for productivity, and I felt a lack of Gen AI practical case studies in finance and accounting, which led me to the third stage practical application with the guidance of Jeff Epstein, professor of finance at Stanford and ex-Oracle CFO. I conducted a six-month independent research on Gen AI use cases in finance and accounting. I conducted that research with my custom GPT prom. We assessed together over 150 solutions. I used some of the AI solutions out there for productivity, meaning note summary, writing, interviews, and compiling the findings in a report with the top 10 case studies. And so I'm excited to share this insight today, but I would not have been able to produce the report, conduct the interviews without AI. So that's my journey.
Great, thanks. And maybe it makes sense for me to share some, all right, so we've been introduced to it, we've been using it, the three of us, for a while now. We can speak about kind of before and after, but my experience, and I would love to hear your folks' experience, my experience has been as we go out and we talk with business leaders, there's a great distribution of experience with it. Some folks are like, yep, definitely. We're using it. We're all in. The board is behind us. Leadership is committed. And then all the way over at the other end where I'm going to sit and wait, right? I've been doing this a long time. We've seen a lot of hype. This sounds like hype. Don't really see the applications yet. Or we can see the applications on the front office aspects of this, but not back here in finance and accounting in the back office. Don't really see what I can do. It sounds like a lot like RPA. That was supposed to change the world too. Didn't really see, and I see Vidya and I see Abraham smiling because you probably heard that. I've heard that. And you know what's different about this? So I just want to kind of share a couple data points on the evolution we're seeing. So right now the latest quarterly pulse survey that we did, we see 80% of leaders recognize Gen AI as important to gaining competitive advantage and market share. So that's great. Okay, so that's a commanding majority. We see folks really 93% of leaders report that they've had to take mandatory Gen AI training, and just in the survey before that, it was only 19% have been required to take training. All right, so we're starting to see this. We're starting to see 73% of leaders are planning to recruit new board members to help guide the Gen AI strategy. So we see indicia that there is an increasing awareness of the potential here. Maybe we're getting past some of the reticence or skepticism that this is just a hype cycle. Maybe I should sit out. I'm wondering, is that consistent with what you're seeing, Vidya, as you work with companies? Do you see an increasing awareness that that this is really has great business value for finance executives, the whole Gen AI space, or is there still a lot of skepticism or reticence from your perspective?
I would say at least in the business space, there hasn't been as much reticence or having to convince project leaders about the value of business AI. Because as you rightfully said it, we're coming from a world of RPA, chatbots, predictive models, machine learning. So this is not new to a lot of organizations. They have been implementing, they've invested money, budget dollars, projects, use cases in getting a lot of things off the ground. There is, of course, measured skepticism, and I would say rightfully so, whether this is still part of the hype curve or do we wait for the next big thing. And that's mostly because it's because of the rapid pace of innovation in generative AI and AI as a whole. I mean, with every single day a new model being released, a new announcement being made, when is the right time to start? So organizations are like, do I pause now? Do I wait for all of this to slow down? Or do I anyway get started and keep revamping? And in which case, there's a lot of cost and uncertainty as to how much budgeting they actually need to put towards AI. But having said that, I think fundamentally, SAP's customers, a large part of customers who are working on ERP, who have these huge sets of data that they've been working on, this is the best case scenario for them to kickstart a project. And specifically, one of the focus areas or needs that come from organization is always finance, because that's something that you can immediately see an ROI. You can immediately see the transformation taking place, be it in the back office or in the front office. I mean, whether it's a financial ledger closing or whether it's an accounts receivable or if it is just reconciliation. I think it's the potential to see a lot of these business scenarios coming to life is extremely viable. And that's where, though there has been quite some delays, I would say, in adoption of projects, our customers are coming to us. They understand that SAP is committed to helping organizations through this transformative phase. We call it the whole relevant, reliable, responsible phases of AI, or our commitment or our pillars from SAP. And when we speak about relevant and reliable, our customers understand that SAP has this huge responsibility to provide relevant business data, because we're the owners of a lot of this business data, and that the data is repeatable and consistent, which is sometimes quite often the biggest problem that comes with AI. So I think, having seen that, the understanding is to find the right use case which makes the maximum impact, rather than getting started when it comes to a lot of the business scenarios with our customers.
Right. Great. Yeah. So that's interesting. You have a you know, on the continuum from unsophisticated to sophisticated, your clients are more towards the sophisticated side, right? They understand where their data is. They have robust decision-making processes already, and they're making investments in the technology and SAP. Abraham, from your perspective, right, you're working with CFOs. I'm sure you probably worked with CFOs that had a broad span of sophistication with regard to their technology, their data infrastructure, things of that sort. So what was kind of, as you did your interviews, did you run into folks who were skeptical from CFOs and other finance executives with regard to Gen AI, or were they similarly receptive to it?
That's a great question, Ed. So my experience was a little bit similar to Vidya and you. There is a great distribution here. You have the pioneers. And I will say, based on the interview, most of the people are what we call in the gray area. They want to do something, but they don't want to go too fast, right? Mm-hmm. They realize they have to do something. And some of the hurdles that they share with us, and there are three hurdles here. It's about data quality, cybersecurity, and data privacy. And so that's what the people in the middle who are trying to move and familiarize with themselves with the technology share with us. On the flip end, the people who are leading the charge here and with whom we leverage the case studies for this research, I can quickly share with you how they address these challenges, right? On data quality, for instance, based on our interviews, the CFOs pioneering Gen AI solution don't wait for perfect data. They start with the data they have and let the AI models result guide the data enhancement. Machine learning solutions foundation are based on an iterative process that can help them refine the data qualities over time. On cybersecurity, our report highlights secure solutions like Microsoft Copilot, enabling CFOs to leverage comprehensive AI solutions within Microsoft ecosystem. And I think Vidya also mentioned SAP ecosystem. And lastly, for data privacy, that's the area where we have seen significant improvement over the last 2 years. that will report highlights enterprise versions of large language models, where you can get SOC 2 type compliance, and that allows company to adopt GenAI use case on a massive scale and impact different business function from legal, finance, accounting, and manufacturing. So this is my experience based on the interviews.
Yep. And you mentioned a bunch of things there, but I know the cyber side of it is something I'm hearing increasing interest and concern about, both thinking about as you start to adopt it internally, what kind of impact would that have on cyber risk? But and similarly, the inbound use of Gen AI on my organization, where phishing attempts and things of that sort get more sophisticated and more targeted, the ability to replicate people's voices and things of that sort. So definitely something that didn't really hear a lot about a year ago, but I'm definitely hearing more and more concern from organizations, finance execs specifically, about how do they respond to bad actors using these tools to, you know, come in and do bad things within their organizations. And there have been examples in the press of that. Vidya, I've seen some references you've made in the past in other venues. And one of the things that was really intriguing, and it's something that I haven't seen a lot of real use cases. I hear people talk about it, but it's on the forecasting side. Okay, so you hear things about it. You say, well, you know, Gen AI would be great for forecasting. And then when I actually ask finance executives, well, give me some examples of how good or how much better is it than what you previously had. I don't always get good data or good, you know, kind of support for that. So Vidya, I was wondering, kind of in your travels, what you've seen around the forecasting, finance forecasting applications of Gen AI and, you know, what you can speak about there. Terms of efficacy or use cases?
I think a lot of the applications that we're seeing in the SAP space that primarily come from the forecasting area do relate to what we see in supply chain efficiencies. So whether it's a financial organization, manufacturing organization, or any others, wherever you take into account different factors that contribute to risk, inventory levels, understanding how different external factors can change, be it a market scenario or stockout scenario, that is where we see a lot of our own supply chain. We call it supply chain resiliency or risk resilient supply chains that come into play. When you specifically talk about the financial space or forecasting model, one of the very easy applications or very intuitive ways that it has been used and it is being used in the AI space is payment allocations. So some of our customers have used this predictive analytics, machine learning as a starting point to understand how they as a payment engine can actually process data, understand from the different sources, whether it's market information, regulatory information, compliance information, understand the tools that they currently use for perhaps payment allocations, but now infuse it with forecasting accuracy based on these different external conditions and see how can they actually predict sales fluctuations? What would be their foray or entry into new markets? What would be the newer payment methods that they could adopt? And specifically when it comes to SAP, this typically involves us having access to a wide variety of data sources that come from the core ERP, S/4HANA, S/4HANA Finance solutions, which basically provide a lot of these regulatory information, and that can come in from multiple data sources. External information, which a lot of the ecosystem or third-party providers provide, which is then absorbed by our own business technology platform. Forecasting and modeling scenarios that we actually build, and planning capabilities that are inbuilt into what A lot of our customers know as SAP Analytics Cloud, which is like our analytics engine where we have these forecasting models inbuilt, where we have our financial models inbuilt. So using a lot of these, we've seen that there's a heightened forecast accuracy, a reduced risk that our customers then see. And of course, that translates into lower overhead costs, which helps them understand what financial services that they can provide. In fact, as a part of a lot of our financial offerings, specifically in the analytics space, we've introduced features like Just Ask, like similar to these photo modeling tools or Canva, which now have AI-infused features. You can now simply tell a financial modeling engine what you want it to do, ask what are the associated risks in the calculation, what would be additional models that you need to actually think about in calculating the cost out scenarios. And SAP Analytics Cloud actually does that for you. We call it the navigational informational transactional aspect of it, which is that AI doesn't simply act as a navigation engine in getting you these reporting data sources or as a search engine giving you that information, but actually helps you correlate all of this information, prediction and forecasting, and gives you the right amount to actually take the decision.
So that sounds like it would democratize kind of decision making for people, where you could just ask as opposed to have to be a data scientist or go find a data scientist.
Exactly.
That's terrific. And as you were speaking about the supply chain aspect specifically, do you see like digital twin kind of applications taking place where people can start to model their enterprise virtually and do what if kind of analysis and learn from that? Is that something that you're seeing yet? Because I know there's talk about it, but again, it's not something I've seen actually in practice yet.
I would say it's early days. I mean, we had a lot of information and interest within the Vision Pro launch in understanding how a mixed reality world could actually bring in different data sources, because it's a classic scenario actually for generative AI, where you bring in all of these disparate data sources and then visualize them with command prompts in a world where you can see it coming to life. But having said that, in a business scenario, I would still say we are a little away from reality or getting these projects executed. But that is not to discount the interest that is there in this topic. The whole concept of humanoid robots and what they can do for the future, and having them move beyond just physical manifestation, but having actually AI power them to think differently, to appear and give these inferences like a Just Ask. I definitely believe that would be, we are not too far away from what that could actually construct for us.
Yeah, exciting days ahead, right? As
Absolutely.
We start, as we start to take this generative AI, and you bring up a great point about adding it to the physical robot, right? So they've been hard coded, trained to do specific things, and now when you start to think about marrying their capabilities with Gen AI, which can bring in all of these different data sources, interact with humans in a much more natural kind of framework, it's going, you know, who knows what kind of interesting solutions we could develop there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a Boston Dynamics kind of a scenario where these robots are, you know, but it set a good trend. And now I think with a lot of these AI-infused powers, we will see a lot of business applications too. I think I'm personally quite keen to see how the humanoid robots develop in the business space. We'll be watching out for that.
Now, Ibrahim, from speaking with the CFOs and doing those interviews, curious about kind of the use cases you've discerned there and like what are best practices that CFOs are employing to kind of pick, rank, prioritize those different use cases. So be curious to hear from your perspective what you're seeing there, best practices.
Sure. Based on the interview we conducted, three best practices emerge among CFOs effectively leveraging AI. The first is, to your point, how do they prioritize the use case? The people we talk to prioritize use cases that can transform business models and require cross-functional collaboration. And NVIDIA mentioned optimizing the supply chain or enhancing sales and marketing efforts with predictive analytics. The main purpose here for the CFOs is to elevate finance as a strategic business partner. So they look for case studies beyond the back office function. Second is the culture. They foster a culture of continuous learning, collaboration, and innovation. For instance, they embed champions in various teams to share AI best practices. They also prioritize mapping end-to-end processes to spend time identifying where are the opportunities that can drive significant AI outcome. Our report also highlighted a matrix that helps team aligning certain use case families like forecasting, chatbots, or anomaly detection to the appropriate AI technique for optimal result. Lastly, they focus on scalable solutions, starting with pilot projects that can be expanded across the organization. We ran into a lot of situations where people were able to run successful pilot, but they were not able to scale those pilots. And the successful CFOs here team, they focus from the beginning on the need to scale the pilot. For example, the report highlights an AI-driven travel expense solution called Absen, piloted in the US by Airbus finance team, that was later expanded globally, reducing expense reimbursement time to hours, mitigating compliance risk, optimizing cost, and reassigning teams to more high-value work. These three best practices enable CFOs to deliver strategic value and sustainable results with AI.
Yeah, the point you raise about the champions, that's something I've seen a number of companies starting to do to great success, because you need a human kind of telling the story, making it relevant to leadership about why is this important to do, to the people who are doing the work, like why does this make sense, and then to all of the people inevitably in organizations that have reasons to keep the status quo. Right? Like, it's been working previously. We never needed Gen AI to do this. Don't really understand why I would need to do it. So the champion aspect is a critical. I think you're spot on with that observation. Vidya, you're going to say something? When I mentioned champions, I saw you smile.
Yeah, I did. I think this is a concept a lot of the organizations have picked up. We call it the train the trainer approach, which is basically that you have someone who's a spokesperson of AI, who understands it, who perhaps is doing the right research for you in the organization. And you don't have to, yes, of course, everyone does get trained on AI, but there's also these centers of excellence or these champions who basically disseminate information regularly, rather than you having to go and look for this information and struggle to find it. And I think that's super valuable in an organization, just to have these kind of single point of contacts or experts, as you may, on AI.
Are you seeing, the two of you, are you seeing the kind of the emergence of centers of excellence within organizations around AI? Chief AI officers, are you seeing kind of the appearance of these folks and structures?
Oh, definitely. And I think a lot of regional play also coming in, because the centers of excellence also pander to the dynamics of the local economy, what's driving the forces regionally, what is the current customer or partner standing within a particular industry. So I think there's a lot of elements that come in that help drive this. So Yeah, absolutely. See these COEs, and I expect more to expand and come in the few days. These COEs also act as research centers, so a lot of organizations are putting in a massive amount of dollars, not only to understand how their organizations can benefit from what's happening externally, but what they can do to contribute to this, because nobody wants to be left behind and wants to also share something of value coming in from their experiences in the business world and add that AI flavor to it.
Thank you for listening to the Finances AI Makeover podcast. We hope you found the discussion insightful. Thank you, Ed, Vidi, and Abraham, for sharing your valuable insights and expertise with us today. Don't miss part two, where we'll dive into AI governance models, AI agents, and the essential skill sets needed for AI talent.